Here we go.
Amblin' Fred's interesting all-Canadian ale. You know, when interesting comes along, my friends, I simply must have some. I like to gather it up in a metaphorical embrace, gently drizzling the interestingness all over my body. Should you pour Amblin' Fred's interesting all-Canadian ale on you? No, but if you want to be more interesting, I would. Attempting to transition to interestingness? Do as the interesting do. Go yoga, like humble. Be charming until the yoga people insist you be less charming. I don't know if you know this, but Fred has a PhD in the flatulence. But even the fragrance of his back end is interesting. And Dan may not be as interesting, but he is very clumsy. The Dan falls off his chair and bumps his head every day. This is Dan Normal. Amblin' Fred's interesting all-Canadian ale. Go to the Stonehooker Brewery and get some. And warm the inside of your belly, smearing the interesting all over the inside of you.
Amblin' Fred's interesting all-Canadian ale. Available now with free delivery anywhere in Ontario. Order yours today at stonehooker.com.
This isn't the real show. This is just the early part of the program where we just warm up a little bit, you know, stretch it out, and then we will officially start the show in a minute or two.
All right.
We were having a riveting conversation about whether I like toast or not. Weird that Dan, do you have toast literally every day before we start the program?
Literally, I do.
Well, I wasn't making word, yeah. I wasn't making fun of it. I just thought it was very, you know, I thought it was very sweet. Okay.
What do you have on the toast, Dan?
Well, some days I have I have peanut butter.
Crunchy Dan, or just or smooth?
No, I never. Oh. Smooth peanut butter with no sugar in it, you know, natural peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. It's natural peanut butter.
It's all fucking oily.
Yeah. Well, it's what you like sugar in your peanut butter?
No.
I just like the regular. No, like
the truth is, Dan, I'm the same as you. I order the natural stuff, but I just thought it would be fun to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, no, I know you're a peanut butter guy. I love peanut butter. Challenging your peanut butterness.
Hey,
your toastness.
Before we listen, there's lots of Dan Duran stuff today, but one of the things I saw a couple days ago, and I wanted to run it by Dan, is that a couple days ago at his home in England, John Alfred Tinniswood celebrated his 112th birthday.
Oh, mm-hmm.
He is the age of the age now of the world's oldest man. Now, Dan, you and John went to school together, I understand.
I remember John.
What are your thoughts about John Alfred Tinniswood?
He used to throw, erasers and things at me.
Yes.
Jab me with his fountain.
That's right. He was
bullshit. They didn't have erasers back then. Come on.
They did so.
Back in the day. Back in the turn. In the 1800s.
No.
Of course they had.
That was a joke then. You know, they didn't have erasers.
Dan, I
protest.
Fred can joke sometimes too.
I read that story. It's pretty neat because he's the oldest living man right now, but there's a woman that's older. And did you see, as part of that story, the record for the longest living person?
I only had that one sentence. I picked it up. What is the record for the longest living person?
122 years.
Wow. Really?
Can you imagine that diaper? Christ.
That's 120 years older than we are now, basically. Almost 60, yeah.
But that old bugger you're talking about,
John,
I saw a little bit with him, and he's like, he's there. He's all there, man. It's crazy.
I don't know. I mean, I watched that Netflix thing on the blue zones in the world, and there are people living into their 80s, 90s, and beyond, and they're very active. But you get to 112. I mean, every day has got to be like, oh, my God, not again. Toast, peanut butter, and humble and Fred show. Come on. This tedious.
Mm-hmm.
What are the blue zones that you'd like to live in?
Japan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it seems like a simple life, you know. Go over there into Japan. Oh, yeah. I start myself one of those little gardens, and then I spend the day trimming my, or, you know, my little, what's that?
Your pubes.
My pubes. That's right. I mean, that's what the Japanese do. The old Japanese people. What's no? I wish I could, I was going to say origami, but what is that? The bonsai. I would spend the afternoon trimming my little bonsai tree, aka my nut sack.
Yeah, Japan's great. Everyone's allotted 1 square foot.
Yeah.
Would you really want to live in that
Japan's
big city?
No, Japan's not like that. Come on.
It's pretty dense, Howard.
Well, I'm pretty
like
dense.
Like Tokyo.
You know, I'm pretty dense. You know, not where I would live in Japan. Have you not seen the Blue Zone? I'm up in the mountains somewhere, and I tend to my garden. I trim my little mini bonsai tree in the afternoon, and I go to bed at 5.
That's on Mount Fuji. Mount Fuji.
Mount Fuji. All right. Anyway.
Another Dan thing. We have to get a review of the sex show he went to last night.
Well, that's on my agenda.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
I thought we would start the show and then get right to that because.
Okay. Yes.
It wasn't a sex show. What was it?
It's a drag show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. On Fox, they think that's a sex show. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did the people participating in the drag show stop down and ask to read stories to children? Because that's also.
That's their big fear.
Their big fear at Fox is if people dressed up as women. Happen to read stories to children somehow that will corrupt them.
Those kids within a week are gay. Oh, that's right. It happens.
Yeah.
It was sold out. I was going to go. Dahl and I were going to go. It was sold out. We dropped down off at the winery. It was very quaint and sweet and lovely. And it just so happened that when we dropped him off, the actual drag queens or whatever you're calling them were looking at the livestock. It was interesting, the whole scenario. They were all dressed up, looking nice, and then looking at a corral of pigs or something. It was weird.
Yeah, one pig. Mm-hmm. Named Spot.
Oh, one pig. Okay, one pig.
Well, there's so much in that story you just told. I want to kind of come back to, because I overheard you guys talking at the end of the show about you perhaps giving Dan a ride to the drag show, and I kept, why can't Dan drive himself?
Well, the answer to that question is because my son took my car. He's on an adventure. He's visiting, but he doesn't have a car. So I said, well, take mine. And Fred has graciously offered to help me out in my times of need.
So I just said to Dan, let Colton go rather than taking public transit. Because, Jesus, you know what that's like in this province. And that way I would chauffeur Dan around a bit or let him use my vehicle. So.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why not just give him your truck rather than you? What, like,
because me and my
charge him? Was that what? Was it like Uber? Peter Burr, Uber?
No, my suite and I were disappointed that we didn't get to partake in that festivity, so we decided to drop Dan off and then carry on into Peterborough and go to the Ashburnham House Ale or the Ashburnham Ale House and have dinner, which we did.
And then how did Dan get home?
Well, Lisa showed up at the place too. She was doing, she's a busy, businesswoman. So she was on had a meeting.
So she gave you a ride back to the trailer.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, we're up
to
date.
So, Dan, was that your first drag show? Tell us quickly.
Let's start the show.
Oh, right.
Dan.
I forgot.
Jesus, man.
Right, right, right. Forgot. Right.
Well, somebody's got to be paying attention to these things.
Well, you know what's throwing me off? All that at the beginning now.
I know.
Psychologically, I'm thinking that. Okay, go ahead.
I know. Listen, both of our grasps on the format of this thing are so fresh, so fucking tenuous. Like, we could go the entire show and not start it, but here, we'll hear all about Dan's drag experience and how he dressed up his wiener as Beyonce. Yeah. right after these kind words. Oh, that's the end of the show. Sorry.
That's the end of the show. Hang Let's wrap here. It up right now because the format's out the window.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by. See you tomorrow. All right, here's Dan Duran.
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Toronto, from our Kawarthas facility with a sunset viewing platform, and from the trailer next door with the Danis Duranis bust. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Michael McCoof Zoom Theater, and brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and our newest returning sponsor, Kelsey's Original Roadhouse. Up with the Humble and Fred End of Summer 13th Anniversary Podcast Party. And now, here are two men who start their day with a pee, a coffee, and a hearty wake up to the world, I'm still alive yell off to the heavens. Of course, they don't actually believe in heaven, so it's to the dark blackness of space. It's Humble and Fred.
Well, all right. It almost sounded like you said we were heroes. I'd like that, actually. I'd like you to say, now here are two heroes that have gone far beyond that of normal radio broadcasters and continue to beat this dead horse. Drew returns to our show. It's, I know, music 2 days in a row, but... And both guys, Greg Wired yesterday and Drew, the R&B hip-hop artist, too. Early on in our podcast, like we're talking 10, 12, or whatever years ago, Drew was dropped by in the studio. And we enjoyed his company, and Drew will be with us today for a short visit. A little bit later on, the retirement Sherpa making his regular stop by this program. And we'll do your emails at some point here, if we remember.
Yeah, Drew. That'll be nice to catch up with Drew again.
So, let's continue. Dan went... Oh, here's the song. I don't know why I... whenever I think of drag shows, I think of this song. Maybe they played this last night during their performance. Do you know this song, Dan?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, they didn't play this last night.
This is called It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Makes sense, yeah.
All right, so forget that. I thought they were going to start yelling, It's Raining Men. Here we go. Okay, so take us through the experience, because both Fred and I have never, other than, I guess you got to experience some of the drag people.
Pre-drag.
Pre-drag.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
yes, I noticed.
And how many were there?
I saw two.
There was three.
Okay.
Yeah. One was hiding, I guess. Or not. I'm not interested in Spot the Pig.
And why was there a pig outside of the drag? I guess it's Peterborough. There's a pig in a corral everywhere. I was about to ask a stupid question. It's Peterborough. Every couple of blocks, there's a corral with some wildlife.
Course. Yeah. It's a vineyard. It's
right.
Yeah. So it's a... What is it? The squeaky duck or the... Yeah. Cheeky duck vineyard. And so they grow, you know, there's grapevines everywhere. There's a vineyard right there. And there's lots of farm.
Imagine that. Yeah, imagine that. They have vineyards and they have fucking vines and shit.
Thanks.
Okay.
At a winery. So, well,
at a winery. Yeah. Hey, by the way,
winery making area.
Was there wine there as well? Or was that? Sorry.
Yes, there was wine. Yes, they have wine. Lots of wine that they serve there.
So what time? Okay. Was the show out of doors or indoors?
It was out of doors.
Okay.
In fact, it was supposed to start at 7, but it ended up starting at about 7:15, 7:20, because a quick a rainstorm came through. Mm. This local thunderstorm.
Did anyone say, rainstorm. Oh, it's raining? That's a drag.
I see. Yeah.
Peterborough.
Yeah, we all dashed inside into they have a lovely inside area, too, where they, you know, we all sat down in there for a bit, and had it continued to rain, we would have been inside. But we went back outside, and then the show began. And then
how many people does this vineyard theater hold?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably about 70 people there.
Nice.
75.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was Violet S. Parks, Lexi Moore, and then Betty Baker was the person who was sort of leading the whole the drag team, I guess.
And so what is that? What happens?
Well, they come out and they basically sing songs, lip sync to it, and then, you know, dance around the restaurant area. And, you know, you people give them tips with, you know, $5 bills and stuff. That's kind of part of the deal. And
Wait a minute. I know what he's thinking. Wait, so you pay to get in.
Yeah.
And then when the drag people dance around, you have to give them more money?
If you feel motivated to do so.
Okay.
You don't have to. It's not required.
Do you slip it into their garter belts? Is that what you do?
Well, none of that. It was a, you know, a family-friendly event.
Ah, right, yeah.
Oh, so there was none of that. But there may have been, I've been to another drag show where that's a little bit more, you know, racy than that. But, yeah, it was.
Did you get a lap dance?
No.
Okay.
He just said it was family friendly. Oh yeah, you know that's they do that at all the family friendly events.
Some they do
for the children.
The more progressive people, yes, they do.
Yeah. Okay. So they come out individually in each perform a song.
Yeah,
and it's fun. It's all campy and fun.
Yeah, the first few songs they actually sang, and then the rest of the songs they were lip syncing to. Hmm. And for example. What songs? I didn't keep track of the songs. I did not keep track of the songs. You know, I recognize most of them. There's a song from the show Wicked, for example.
Oh yes,
Lisa
saw that.
Yeah, so you know.
In fact, I made it to intermission with Wicked. I think
you and I saw the first time we saw it was together.
Yeah,
actually, I've seen it a couple times. It's one of Spencer's favorites.
Yeah, I saw it that time. You and I think, saw it in New York, did we not, Howard? Was that not when we went to New York?
All the ones we saw in New York, we mainly fell asleep to.
Yeah, Wicked, I think I made it slightly into the second half, and then that was it. I was done.
That's funny. I just had a memory of a few weeks ago. I went to a movie with my new friend, and I had forgotten to tell her that for sometimes I sometimes fall asleep, and I fell asleep. I'm talking about like 10 minutes into the movie.
With your mouth open kind of
thing?
Well,
I didn't. And here's the funny thing is I thought that you wouldn't have noticed. Yeah. And then because I only kind of was nodding off for a few minutes, and then and she didn't say anything. And then we were walking back out after the show to my car, and I said, "Oh, I don't know if you noticed." She goes, "Oh, I noticed." She said,
"Is it really?" Yeah, I have the drool on my shoulder to prove it.
Right. She said it was something like, "It was quite apparent you were sleeping." And I said, "Well, I get, you know, the lights go down, I get all cozy." Right. So Dan, go ahead.
Was it exhilarating? Like, did you? Like, you know what I mean? Was it like energy charged? It was like, yeah, this is cool.
Well, it was interesting. I don't know if I'd go that far. Some people were, you know, hands in the air, kind of excited about the whole thing. That wasn't me.
Those people I can't stand.
That's right. I don't understand. The people with the hands in the air seem to, you know, enjoying themselves, unencumbered by shame. I don't know. We don't get those people.
Within seconds, it's on Facebook. Oh, look at the good time I'm having. Anyway.
Yeah. That's right. Although, you know, sometimes maybe I think maybe those people have it right, Fred. Maybe they do.
Not a care in the world.
But here's what I wanted to say. So I've seen, you know, drag men or drag people. I don't know. I don't know what the right term is. And they can be quite attractive women. They can pee. They're just beautiful. Let's just say it. Did you find them so?
Well, not entirely, but you know the Betty Baker one. She had a beautiful face, so that worked in that way. Yeah, so that was pretty good. Yeah, but you are right. There are some drag queens who are just.
I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
The one I saw was treading on Dan territory, like, ooh, I mean, I like you, you know.
What do you mean, Dan territory?
You know, like, you know what Dan doesn't like.
Oh, I see. She was a big, beautiful woman. Larger woman, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Dan obviously didn't like her. Well, that's great, man.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. And, well, good for you. Listen, awesome. Great way to support local Peterborough arts.
Yeah.
I want to go to the winery. It looked very quaint and neat. Now, did they serve beer there?
No. They serve their wine. Yeah, they don't serve
beer. And red and white?
Just white right now. Red's on the way, but they don't. They haven't started brewing or whatever you call it.
Brewing,
making, yeah, brewing. Yeah.
Did you you eat there?
Yes. Oh yeah, I had the. It was kind of an appetizer special menu for the evening, so there's all kinds of great... I think some of the things are on their normal menu, but yes, they had a really good burrata.
Ooh, I like a burrata.
Nice. It was smoked burrata.
Oh, my God.
They have a big smoking experience there as well.
Wow. Did they... I noticed when I was on the menu, when I thought I was going, I saw like a lamb share dish. Did they have that?
No, that wasn't on for the night.
Okay. I had a lamb burger where I went to last night, and it was outstanding. Yeah.
Good.
You know, you think if it's the whole night is a drag theme, like, you know, maybe some of the dishes, like it's a lamb, but it's dressed up as something else, you know.
That's right. You know, yeah. Speaking of which, Howard, yes, I must ask you this. Off the top, you made reference. You said Dan dressed his thing up as...
dressed his wiener up as Beyonce, yes.
Yeah. What would you dress yours up as? What do you think would be befitting of your wiener?
If I was to dress...
Yeah.
For Halloween, of course.
If I was going to dress my wiener up for Halloween, it's a great question. Toto from The Wizard of Oz.
So it's a dog.
It's a dog. I would make it look
like a
chihuahua. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. What about, did you have somebody, what would you dress your wiener up as? Here's a great subject. This is why no one in our families listens to this show, because it's ridiculous.
I don't know. I have to be honest and, you know, true to form, Dan Beyonce, that works because, you know, he has an award-winning thing.
And yeah.
I don't know. B. Arthur, K. Ballard, something like that.
No, I was going to say, considering it's your wiener, one of the hobbits from Lord of the Rings. Little tiny.
You still haven't answered.
I did answer.
You said Toto. That's a dog.
Oh, okay.
A person.
Oh, I know. Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Which one was that?
The little midget guy.
Oh, the little
person. Oh, I'm sorry. I know we're not supposed to say midgets.
It's supposed to be a woman, Howard. Let's see the concept here.
Who was yours again?
B. Arthur.
Well, B. Arthur.
First of all,
Ballard.
I just found out about this bit 47 seconds ago. Already I've come up with two. You're just going to something B. Arthur.
Well, it's drag, though. So it's got to be a woman.
All right. I would dress mine up as Lady Gaga. Is that better?
Okay, there we go. Bit over.
No, I never want this to end. Never. I said to Fred before the show started, I said, you know, it was around 7:30. I said, oh, is Doll awake yet? And he said, oh, man, maybe 7:30. She's up doing her word games or looking at real estate or boots. I thought, basically anything, but listen to this crap.
No, exactly.
It's like, he's only a few feet away down the hall on the trailer, but she's like, I'll do anything I can distract myself. Oh, I'm sure she overheard this award-winning bit.
Yeah. Or she's listening to Smartless going, why can't they be like these guys?
Yeah, why can't they make the money that these guys are making?
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Dan? That NFL stars Travis Kelce and his brother have been signed to do a podcast.
No way.
For $100 million.
Oh, my God.
Along with
that. How much
is... go ahead.
Is that a record then?
Nope. Oh, no. They just re-signed Joe Rogan on Spotify for $250 million. SiriusXM shelled out $100 million and $125 million for the rights to Smartless and another podcast called Call Her Daddy.
Yeah, I saw that one. It's sort of frustrating because the path that podcasting has taken, as we were mentioning last week, it's just made rich people richer. You know? I would like to see examples of people that had nothing and built it into... I know they're out there, but not to those numbers.
Well, to be fair, the women that do this podcast called Call Her Daddy, I've seen it.
Yes.
They're not. They didn't start off with Smartless level fame.
No.
And the story goes on to say podcasting is as much about the star power of the hosts, including video content, live events, and tours, as the show itself. The industry is becoming increasingly top-heavy. Even with almost 450,000 active shows, the top 25 podcasts account for nearly half of the weekly listeners in the U.S.
Yeah, isn't that something? And some of them just aren't very good.
No, but they're famous.
But the people are famous, so people listen. No, I know, I get it.
I guess, like, well, I guess not to those people, but when that kind of money is on the line, doesn't it change the concept of the show a little bit? Like, you're a little bit more worried or concerned about, you know, listeners and making sure that you're doing the right thing. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I don't think so, Dan. I mean, because those people that are doing them, I don't think that, I'm just looking at the top charts right now. It's Joe Rogan, Smartless, something called Moral of the Story.
Rogan's a bit different, like his format, but most of them, look at all the other stars making big money. It's just stars interviewing stars for the most part.
Well, I was going to say, like, in the top...
How do you go wrong with that?
Yeah, in the top 10, you've got The Weekly Show with Jon Stewart now as a podcast. This is the comedy category. Conan O'Brien, Theo Vaughn, who I know, you guys probably don't know, Killed Tony, another very famous comedy podcast. And Mark Maron still rates top. He's 32nd. Bill Burr, a perennial top podcast. And I know what you're thinking. Where this is, by the way, the comedy category, where there are 450,000 podcasts that are active, I'd say a huge percentage of those are in the comedy category, where Humble and Fred are currently 141st on that list.
Which sounds low, but it's high. Not many Canadians above us other than what CBC passes off.
Yeah, I'll tell you, right? there might be, and I'm just doing it quickly. I've done it. There might be. There's the debaters. There's our friend Ali Hassan. Maybe there's four or five before us. Maybe. But I'm saying.
They're all CBC.
They're all CBC. For the most part, from what I can see, they're all CBC.
Yeah, and they almost don't count because they have that machinery behind them.
We're really one of, as far as independent podcasts go, and, you know, we don't pat ourselves on the back enough, but where we rank on this list is crazy because I know some of I'm very familiar with a lot of the comedians that are hosting these podcasts. For instance, we're 141. Whitney Cummings, who's had Netflix specials, used to be on the roast all the times, she's 154.
I love looking back at her, you know, down on her.
Well, and then you may have heard of Matt Friend. He's that comedian that goes around to all the conventions, and you see him online. He does a lot of impressions. He's the guy that does Stern well. Right? Humble and Fred, 141. Matt Friend, 165.
Yeah, what I still don't fully understand, Howard. So you give Joe Rogan, and the Rogan thing, 3 and 4 hours a day, and to be the number one, like, to me, I don't. I'm not disputing it. I just don't get it. Like, who can invest that much time every day in his podcast to make it number one? You'd think a number one podcast would be, you know, shorter. A better bite size. I'm fascinated by that. But anyway, beyond that, you give him $250 million. To what benefit is that to Spotify? It's huge anyway. Like, where is the return realized there? I don't get that.
Well, I mean, the one regular podcast that you've turned me on to that I listen to, when I say regular, every day, which is, you know, The Countdown, there's that two-minute roll at the beginning. There's a couple of spots in the middle. So it's got to be, you know, you were a program director, so you know, it's got to be worth something to somebody. Before we wrap it up, I'll tell you. So we're number 141, and this is another one you've turned me on to. Club Random with Bill Maher is 193.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just to give you, I only say that to give people some perspective on, you know, we're doing okay.
But you talk about podcasts of the rich getting richer. Look at Bill Maher. So he's got, you know, his show, you know, Real Time with Bill Maher, HBO, makes millions off that. So he's got this little house, like this little coach house, at his place that he's turned into a studio. And all the guests come to his house.
No, no, I know.
They sit down in chairs. He opens booze. They smoke cigars and just talk about anything.
No, I know.
Like, the only person I know like that who can get somebody to come over to their house is Mike Boone.
No, exactly. Yeah.
And anybody although, who come to Boone's.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was just saying, Mike doesn't offer weed and cigars, but he does offer some nice Palma Pasta stuff. I get it.
Yes.
All right. We're already behind in the show. Dan's going to come back and do the news. The Sherpa's going to be here. We're going to get to some of your emails here in a second, but first, Fred, man.
Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Go to chamberplan.ca today and find out all about it. Let them know how big your company is, how many people, what you're looking for, and not so much they design a plan for you, but there are different levels that you can buy in at, whatever you're comfortable with, you know. Again, prescriptions and dental and therapies and an HR component. If you choose the Teladoc system, fantastic. Has worked for the Humble and Fred show. And again, the travel benefits. Howard can attest to that. I mean, what Howard went through paid our premiums for the next 600 years.
That's funny.
It did, actually. And it's a great plan for small business. Go to chamberplan.ca today.
Okay, I'm going to start this week. Hang on a second. Let me get rid of that. No, it wouldn't have mattered if I had a mouse. All right, let's go. It's your emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. The subject line to this very first one, Stoic Humble and the Tax Man. And it comes from Bill. And, of course, he starts with...
Hi, guys.
Longtime fan since the early CFNY days. And in a strange format change, he starts with his bowel movements good, heart rate 64, nice. BP 127 over 80. His email says, I had a good chuckle today when Stoic Howard. I like that. I'm going to start calling myself that, Stoic Howard, because I'm very stoic now.
Oh, yes.
I'm very, very reasoned. I don't react. When Howard was discussing he is the only one paying all of Canada's taxes. It seems like I am. Apparently, this is my year. Bill says, I too fell victim to our fair government, as HH did. First time in my life this happened, too, where I pay up front this year. Like I have to. If you owe $3,000 or greater, this is the protocol, apparently. I found this out. Kind of frustrating when I spoke to the tax firm I use about this, because first time this has ever happened. I look at my income taxes, CPP from pay stub, and just think, come on, man. And I couldn't agree more. Ciao is how Bill signs off. And thank you, Bill. Fredry?
Hi, guys.
Subject matter here, Jay's No Hitters. This is from Jim Kloss. And he says, hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
He says, another one of life's crossover moments on Monday's show. You were talking about the almost no-hitter on Sunday by the Jays, Bowden Francis, I believe it is. That stirred my memory. And I planned this email to bring up Dave Steeb's no-hitter in Cleveland. But lo and behold, Fred recanted the entire story with such detail, it brought me back to that day. I, too, was in the crowd. In fact, in the left field stands where we could see Junior Felix easily record the final out. I remember that day fondly because I was with my father and my good buddy and his dad as young university students on a baseball road trip. We saw all three games of that series, including that history-making final game. I lost my dad to cancer when he was only 64, so you mentioning that that day brought back that wonderful memory and many more. Okay.
Wow.
Stay interesting. Jim C. Heart's still beating and I'm still shitting.
That's young to lose your father at 64.
I know. That's you now, me 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Crazy. I'm not ready to go. Are you?
Mm. Well, some depends on the day.
Depends on the day.
This depends. Mm. Okay, well, very nice. Thank you very much. This is from Brian Barnett.
Hi, guys.
And the subject line, selling like hotcakes. And he's just cut and pasted a definition. So when this happens, Humble and Fred Hundy Pease, when somebody does not put the salutation at the beginning, I always believe that it's inferred.
Hi, guys.
And this is the definition, according to the American Heritage Dictionary of Idioms, Wikipedia redirect, and this archived New York Times recipe. A hot cake is essentially just a pancake. I think we found this out. Mm-hmm. But its origins, it originated in the 1800s when simple cornmeal versions were sold at church bake sales and snapped up by the congregation before they went cold.
Oh.
So they were selling like hotcakes because people wanted to get them. Oh. And
that
just
makes sense.
He supplies no heart rate or his bowel movements, but he does say Brian Barnett, a.k.a. Double B, from the Wick. Thanks, Brian.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Subject matter here, Globe and Mail letter about Frampton. Out of control drivers, vehicular psychos. And this is from Julie Fleming, our friend Julie Fleming. And she doesn't start with hi, guys. She starts with Fred, why do you agree?
Oh, sorry. I threw it in for it. Go ahead, start again.
That's Fred, right. What? She says, Fred, wondering if you agree with a smiley face.
Hmm.
Oh, no, a troubled face. I'm sorry, not smiley. It's a squiggle in the mouth. Okay.
Okay.
Troubled face.
All right. Yes. Troubled face.
Okay. As a medical... what this is, actually, is from a woman. She sent us this. Okay. Follow. She, Julie sent us this. It was actually a woman who lives in Brampton. I guess letter obviously, to the editor, Globe and Mail. As a medical humanitarian, I've worked in some dangerous settings, she says, conflict zones, natural disasters, and epidemics. Despite this, I have never felt as exposed as I feel on the roads of Brampton and the broader GTA. It seems that every time I go out, I have a close call or witness an egregious act of dangerous driving.
Yeah.
It will be iconic if, after taking calculated risks all my life and surviving, I die in a flaming wreck on Queen Street.
Ironic. I think you said iconic. I think she was ironic.
Oh, ironic. Yeah, right. Yes, okay. It will be ironic. I'm sorry. Yeah. I will vote for any politician who promises to clamp down on these vehicular psychos. And this was written by Laura Lee Morris, a doctor from Brampton. Do I agree? Yes. And especially the 410.
Well, I was going to ask you, where, because she says Queen Street in Brampton. That's not the 410. So where specifically? I mean, is it bad all over Brampton?
Yes, I would say there's a problem in Brampton with young guys in souped up cars using straightaways like Kennedy Road. Queen Street, it's very busy, but beside me, Kennedy Road, like in the evening, there's long straight stretches where there's not a lot of traffic. They're crazy. You know, I can hear it from my house. I see it. I've witnessed it. But the 410 is crazy. As soon as you get on that 410, you have to be on guard because there's weaving and...
Well, I was going to say, you've made me aware of this, and not just, like, if I'm heading to your house to drop something off or I'm heading up that way, I'm often on the 410. And I do feel, maybe it's because we've talked about it, a perceptive shift in how people drive. But I want you to know, in front of my house, in the 8 years I've been here, it's just as you described. Young guys, like, you know, you can hear them flying down the Queensway in, you know, cars that make a lot of noise. And I think it's gotten bad everywhere, is my point.
Oh, okay, yeah, maybe. Again, I can't really speak to that because if I'm not here at the Tin Palace, I'm in my little... you know, corner of Brampton. So, I don't know. Is it less police on the road policing it? Because I find it sometimes frustrating that you'll see speed traps in places that it's not really, they're not placed for safety. They're placed for revenue. You know what I mean?
For quotas,
and then
yeah.
There's a lot of places where you would think, wow, they'd be better suited if they were on this street or that street. So who knows? And like anything else, they've probably cut back on patrols and police and whatever it is. But it's not a good situation. But, you know, proof's in the pudding. You say, you know, it's bad everywhere. Brampton, bar none, the highest car insurance rates in in the country. So there you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that passing that on. Julie, we appreciate everything Julie does for this program, our number one political correspondent. This is from Rob Dewey, subject line, YouTube.
Hi, guys.
He says, and he, even though he said this is more for Freddie, as I know he watches YouTube more than a lot of other streaming channels, but I've kind of, you know, copped onto that as well. And I didn't tell you this, but I tried premium for a couple months.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just couldn't. I thought, well, I want to see what this is like without commercials, because I started watching it quite a bit. And Rob passes on some great advice. I subscribed a couple years ago and paid the money to go ad free, which is, I'm going to tell you, that makes the YouTube experience so much better. But if you pay by month, like I did for a couple months trial, it can be a bit pricey. He says, best decision I've made when it comes to streaming services. I have several hobbies and watch YouTube a lot. My advice is to subscribe through YouTube on your laptop, not the iOS app. You get a year for about $129 for the entire year instead of monthly at $17 through Apple. I didn't do it through Apple. I did it through Google Play, and Google owns YouTube. Rob says, just my 2 cents. And it's great advice. And I would just say that we hadn't talked about it, but I started watching a lot of YouTube. And I get into these aviation rabbit holes where I will watch. It's a lot. I've told you before. I like to watch, you know, people landing big planes, and I'll just do that for an hour. But the commercials were driving me crazy. So I tried it, and it really is a completely. It's great. It's actually very, very good without the spots.
Yeah, I'll have to do that because I do spend a lot of time. You know, I like it, you know, all the late night monologues, and
yeah,
I get lost in, and of course that leads to the subject of what they're talking about on, and well, I don't have to explain to you how that works, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, one of the ones I watch regularly is Kimmel when he's on, Seth Meyers, A Second Look, or whatever that feature is called. That's from Rob. He signs off, Rob from St. Catharines, new sentence. Too fat for Dan Duran. All right, a couple more.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Subject matter, aging with energy, dash Shediac. And this is from Justin Deverenz. We've heard from Justin before. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hello from Vancouver. I'm so happy to hear that none of you suffered losses during the big rains a week or so back in the GTA. I just wanted to touch on Fred's trip to Shediac, New Brunswick. I was out there a few summers ago, and I can tell you there's some okay places for lobster and some bad places. There's a definite trick to picking the right lobster, and that's to pick one of the smaller ones if you can. And always slurp up some of the salt water from the shell when it's cold. That really helps you get a better and more memorable flavor. My dad grew up in the area, and we go back to visit family from time to time. $50 sounds a bit pricey, but I've also had really bad lobster there, so it's probably better that the more expensive stuff, you know, is the way to go, as opposed to like $35 for something crappy. Pause, and then he says, Dan's cock show murder mystery sounds almost like Dexter.
That's right.
But way more entertaining.
I like that.
For your reference, I'm paying $200 a night for Gatineau in October, which is good because they were all $250 for me on my trip out east. Thanks for always making my days better. I imagine in October the prices dip a bit, but
I'd say
hotel rooms.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but still $200.
All right.
Better than $250, but still pricey.
Yes, I mean, they're still pricey if you think that hotels, like when we were talking about it the other day, it's pricey if you think hotels are $100 a night. They're just not.
Oh, no, exactly. But I'm saying like Gatineau.
Yeah, I don't know.
Gatineau in October, you know what I mean? It's like not really skeezy. Like, it's weird. Anyway.
Let me continue now with this latest email from Brad.
Hi, guys.
His name is Brad Bradish. And I don't think we've heard from Brad before. Because I would remember a guy, his first name is Brad, and his last name is Bradish. I find that very interesting. Of course he says, hi, guys, because he's not an animal. Just listened to yesterday's show and heard you talking about the rail strike. He says, I managed a rail tank car repair facility where we maintain the acid slash corrosive tank cars. A huge product moved by rail is chlorine bleach for water treatment systems. No city has the capacity to hold large amounts, larger than a few weeks worth. Fred, he says, let me know if you want to go inside a tank car. He can make it happen. You know what? Great. You go ahead. Then he continues, was also doing a celebration lunch. This, I love hearing this, Brad, as you know, one of the people in the sales department. He says, I was doing a celebration lunch and heard Kelsey's was back. So I treated 11 employees to a wonderful lunch at Kelsey's, where burgers, wings, and steaks were delicious. We also had a vegetarian who noted the veggie burger was one of the best he had ever had. Heart rate 59, bowel movements regular. Thank you, Brad. And thank you, Brad.
Very nice.
Yeah, I love all that. And I will tell you, I sent, as soon as I got that, Brad Bredish. That would be, if your name was Fred Fredish.
No, I know.
I sent that right away to our agency, and they sent it off to Kelsey's, and everyone got happy. And, you know, if that, by the way, if that ever happens to you, you ever go to Kelsey's or any other sponsors, we would appreciate it. Hey, we got to wrap it up because Drew's here.
Okay.
So why don't you save, we'll save your last email until the end, if we can.
Okay, yeah, because, which would be fitting, because it's more of a thank you and a look ahead from a, you know, a Hun DP.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's good. Yep.
All I'm good. Just saying
all
that.
Good. All good.
Mm. Okay, let me get the Drew ready here. I'm getting him on the, sending him on, make sure we get the right thing here. Da-da-da-da. As I mentioned, you know, this, there he is. This week's kind of like, you know, we had Greg Wired on. You're kind of sideways, Drew. There we go. We had, this week we had our friend Greg Wired on, who was a big part of our show in the early days. And so was this character. His full name is Andrew Grange, but he's the Juno Award-winning musician known as Drew. Look at Drew. Here we are, still alive all these years later.
Yo. What's up, fellas?
Well, we're survivors, you know.
Drew. That's right.
We're still here. As how
me too.
Yeah, I know.
When we first met you 10 or 11, 12 years ago, would it be fair to say that that was the beginning of the of your career? You're a pretty young guy at that time.
Yeah, it was the beginning of my solo career.
Okay.
Right, because I was with, in essence, before I made the whole solo move in, well, actually, no, that was my first interview with you guys was 10 years ago.
Maybe more. And I forgot that you were with InEssence and you guys were, you know, you were around in the early 2000s. But by the time we started in 2011, you had gone on your own. Yes. And that was kind of the beginning of it for you, right?
That's true. Yes, definitely.
So how has this time treated you? And what can you tell us, update us on your career?
You know what? I took a little time off of music to take a step back. I'm not a big fan. I've said this in so many interviews. I'm not a big fan of the business model of the music industry. And, you know, and with this whole streaming world and, you know, artists making a percentage of a cent per stream, you know, just doesn't make sense to me. It takes us back to like the 1920s and 30s where artists really had to, you know, prove why they should be paid anything. That's kind of how it feels right now.
You know, Drew, yeah, we were talking about that off the top of the show. I mean, podcasting, you know, in general, it seems that the rich are getting richer off podcasting, you know, like a lot of the, you know, Joe Rogan and, you know, the smartless guys and everything. And I guess it's streaming is like that too. I mean, the big artists, they're doing all right with pennies on a play, but people on their way up or struggling or trying to become established, they're not making enough, are they?
Definitely not. You know, when you see people post that they, oh, we got 1 million streams, and you know, like my new album, that my most recent album that came out in 2021, we're at 3 million streams now, and that means nothing.
Yeah.
That means nothing, unfortunately.
The thing is, it doesn't take, you know, and I thought a little bit about this before. Like, let's take that example. It doesn't take any less effort, money, time, talent, ingenuity to put together music now. It was the same amount as it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago when he and I started. The problem is, if you were in 1997, when we were sort of at the height of our radio careers, if an artist like you sold 3 million records, you would be talking to me. You would be talking to me from your yacht, man.
Yes, you know, and that makes sense. Like, even if we got a dollar a stream, or even 25 cents a stream, you know, we get up to 3-4 million streams, we're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's obvious that someone made a real choice. And, you know, I think it's Universal that owns Spotify. They really calculated the numbers and crunched the numbers and say, if we cut down what we pay these artists, you know, a percentage of a cent, then we can make, you know, all this more money based off of sponsorship and, you know, ads. And, you know, they're making a lot of money off of us. So from then till now, not to sound jaded.
It's okay. You're talking to two guys that are very jaded.
Oh, very jaded.
But that's kind of why I took a step back and I looked at the industry. I'm like, okay, what can I do? Where is there a gap, in a void, I should say, in the music industry, especially in Toronto or in Canada? And I found, like, myself and my fiance, I'm getting married in a couple weeks, by the way, September 20th.
Oh, congratulations.
Congrats.
Hey, you think you have less money now? Wait a few weeks.
No, I know. This is true. This is a fact. But myself and my fiance used to be like, you know, I wish there was somewhere we could go that we could get dressed up and have a nice dinner and take in, you know, some of our favorite songs from, you know, the 90s, 80s, 90s, I should say even from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in that sweet spot where I love all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us also. And seeing with all the Vegas residencies, from Usher's Vegas residency to New Edition to now even Wu-Tang Clan has a residency in Vegas. Vegas is really opening up to that era of music. But I'm like, you know, a lot of people, there are a lot of fans in Canada or even in Toronto that love that era and would love to be able to fly to Vegas and go watch the show and, you know, have to pay for hotel, pay for flights, pay for tickets for the concert. I'm like, I'm
lose,
like,
lose money.
Lose money, yes. You know, and it's like, I was like, what if I created something here to give, you know, people here the similar experience, you know, in a Vegas style show. And like, when I say Vegas style, I mean, you know, we're all, you know, in well-dressed, we're all in black and white tuxedos. Mm-hmm. You know, we have choreography in the same lane as, say, Usher or a New Edition. You know, dancers, full band, horn section. I'm like, could I create this? I'm like, it seemed far-fetched to me at first. I'm like, this is going to cost me a lot of money to pay all these people. Can I even do this? And it's funny, when you put one foot in front of the other and you just start to make the small steps, I find that doors open up. People say it's the universe. People might call it God or whatever it is that starts to act on your movements. And that was the thing. So I basically took one step in front of the other and it created this, I can't even call it a show. It's more of like an experience. It's more of like a production.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to shoot a commercial to show people what this is. And I didn't know how I was going to do that either. But I'm like, okay, let me start by recording the song. So I recorded New Edition, If It Isn't Love, Boyz II Men, On Bended Knee, and Tony, Feels Good.
Nice.
Right, I don't know if you guys remember those songs.
Hey, of course. You know, Fred and I, a lot of people don't know that Fred and I were in a boy band back in the early 1900s.
Mm. And I can hip and hop with the best of them.
Yeah, but not to move you along, but basically, this is, it's called your soul nostalgic residency is how this all ended up.
is how it all ended up.
And,
yes.
And how long has that been going on, and how often does it go on, and where does it happen?
Yeah, we launched Valentine's Day on breakfast television. And then our first actual show was February 15th, the day after, at the beautiful Aqua Supper Club, which is on the exhibition grounds in Toronto. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's been going on now since February 15th, and it's once a month. At first, we didn't know how long it was going to go. And as we started February, March, April, May, and as we're coming into the summer, we noticed it's just starting to grow, you know, and the owner of Aqua Supper Club, big up to Moses from Aqua Supper Club for seeing the vision. I don't know if there's any other venue that would have taken the chance on us the way that he did. And it's been going now monthly. The next one is September 6th. And we've now extended it through December. So September 6th, October 11th, November 15th, and December 20th.
Well, I want to talk about the because you talk about it's at Aqua Supper Club. Everybody go and check it out. And it's the Soul Nostalgic Residency. But, you know, we were talking about, you know, artists not making money. And, you know, it's a pretty expensive proposition to put that many people on a stage at one time.
Yes.
And I'm looking at the specs here. It says it seats 350 people or 1,000 people standing.
Yes.
So what kind of numbers are you putting in there? Is it 350 or is it 1,000?
We haven't hit 1,000 yet with the full standing room. We've hit around 250. And in this restaurant, that's packed. So if we do ever hit 1,000, people will probably have to stand on the patio. Those specs may be a little off.
Okay.
Because
is it like a dinner show type thing, or is there food like involved? So
yes.
That would be difficult with 1,000, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we just, you know, I feel it is growing to that rapidly, but yes, it is a dinner. So how it works is the show starts around 9:15. We get people to get their doors open around 7:30. And, you know, big up to my guy starting from scratch. He's the DJ for the ensemble. I've known Scratch for 30 years. And he was very inspired by this idea also. He's like, Drew, if you ever do this, I want to be the DJ. I want to be a part of it. So the doors open at 7:30. People can come in, order dinner. It's amazing Italian cuisine. The food is amazing. Mm-hmm. They have the time to, you know, sit down, eat. Scratch is playing the best hits, and his, you know, Scratch is the best DJ. I would say one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. But he's playing songs from those eras, from the 60s to the early 2000s. And, you know, the way Scratch mixes, it just gets people really ready for the show. And right, come around 9:15, he does a huge introduction for me, and I come out and I do 2 40-minute sets with a 20-minute intermission.
Yeah, again, and part, and we sort of started off with this theme of, you know, streams versus artists or, you know, compensation.
Yes.
And it's interesting that we got to the we say the word interesting too much on the show, Drew. It's why usually when I say it, I make this noise. Anyway, because a lot of again, having been in radio, Freddie and I, for a long time, and seeing the business turn upside down, because it used to be artists would only tour, not only tour, but they would tour in support of records. And then the model changed to artists toured, records supported an artist tour so that they could make money going out, the live audience experience.
Yes.
So here you are with an extravaganza, the Vegas style extravaganza. Do you do any other touring these days beside at Aqua Supper Club?
Well, yeah, like I mentioned before, when I took a step back to look at the industry, that was one of the reasons why I created this, is to create my own opportunities. I felt I was, you know, to be completely transparent, you know, I felt like I was like chasing bookings and, hey guys, my album is streaming 3 million, you know, I'm a Juno Award winner, you know, let's try and get some bookings. And I can speak for many R&B artists from Canada. It is like pulling teeth to book shows in this country for R&B artists, black R&B artists in this country. People don't say this enough, maybe I don't know if people see like artists like, say, you know, who's really hot right now. Judy Black is really hot right now, and they kind of put everyone in that bubble, like, oh, they all must be doing as good as Julie Black is right now. We are not.
Why?
I don't know. Honestly, it's been an ongoing problem. Like, artists like, say, Glenn Lewis, who I really look up to. Glenn Lewis should be booked solid. He should be booked solid. He's not. You know, I should be booked solid. I'm not.
Well, and I would throw out something as a suggestion as to why there just isn't the infrastructure. There isn't the, you know, if you were, I mean, I could talk about, if I don't want to make you feel weird, but I could talk about how many things, how many artists, how many awards you've won, how many records you've sold. Mm-hmm. And you've been doing this for a long time. If you were a non-R&B artist, we'll say, wink, wink, then where you would be playing all the time everywhere. It's just that I don't think the infrastructure or the demand is there across the country, other than, say the big Canadian cities. Like, you know, I don't know that there's a venue in Regina, Saskatchewan, where you could go and play. There's,
I mean, I would understand that, but even in the big cities, it's a struggle. You know, it's that's why I'm like, okay, I need to figure out something that I can create my own opportunities. I can put it together myself. I can promote it myself, because I am the sole promoter of Soul Nostalgic. I do everything myself. I come up with the set list, choreography, the look, the promo on Instagram, the promo on billboards. I do everything myself, because I realize now if I don't do it, no one will. No one's coming to save us.
And you have to get creative. Howard and I love to play with the numbers in situations like that. Now, you mentioned you went solo, and I'm thinking, you know, you're not getting paid by streams, so you know, if you want to make money, you have to go out and perform. And the thing is, if you've got five or six people, now you got to split it five or six ways. So I could see why a lot of people would want to go solo. You know, often, you know, that band Dwayne Gretzky, I watch those kids, and I know they all do different things, but I'm thinking, holy cow, I don't care how much they're making tonight, they got to split this 10 ways. Like, it doesn't work for a lot of... It just doesn't work for a lot of people. They gotta do it alone.
You know, Drew. Yes. We're Freddie and I are friends with some of these guys. I'm friendly with some of these comics, Ron James and Jeremy Hotz, that go across the country, and they do it all themselves. They get the room. Like a friend of mine, Jeremy, did the Roy Thompson Hall last fall. Well, it was all self generated. Ron James goes across the country. So, are there thoughts, or are you thinking about taking the Soul Nostalgic residency idea and putting and going to those cities on your own?
Yes, definitely. This has been, you know, thankful again to Aqua Supper Club. This was like a testing ground. You know, kind of test. Tests of concept or proof of concept.
Yeah.
And it's been proven now. Like, it's, you know, the first couple of shows, maybe 50, 60 people. And now the last couple of shows have like sold out all the tables. It's been like, it's definitely growing. And the feedback from the audience, which is, you know, the audience, I'd say age demographic is around 38 to around 50 to 60, 55 to 60, there's not many outlets, there's not many opportunities in this country for them to go to events like this. So I feel like they're kind of jumping all over it. So the next thing is to take it on the road.
Yeah.
You know, and it can definitely be a traveling show. So that's something that's in the works, and not just on the road in Canada, but we want to, ultimately, we want to end up having a Las Vegas residency, because there's nothing like this, even in Las Vegas, which blows my mind.
Well, you know, Drew, there's lots of, you know, as far as proof of concept, there's some soft seat theaters in this area. There's quite a few of them. The Oakville, the one in Oakville, Richmond Hill, sort of 300 to 500 seaters.
Yes.
And I see the shows they get in there. This would be, you would absolutely sell those things out.
Definitely. Definitely.
And for bigger money. I mean, you know, those places regularly, those tickets are $60, $70, $80, $100.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's a thing, too. Like, some people would look at those ticket prices, and those ticket prices are similar for bigger shows, bigger artists. but it's the demographic that will pay those that a little bit more to be able to actually, you know, have this type of outing for themselves and, you know, for their family, for a date night, for, you know, like a girls' night. It's something that is giving them more options. And that's the next thing we're looking into, you know, those types of venues. There's Flato in Markham that we're looking at. We're looking at doing some stuff at Lula Lounge.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, listen, I know you wouldn't think, but if you need Fred and I, you know, couple white guys in our 60s to come and do some of our DJing with Scratch.
Oh, I would love it.
You know, maybe Scratch could
just
take a set.
How do you guys feel about putting on a black and white tuxedo with a bow tie? And
we're there for you, my friend.
It's been about 30 years since I've done that, but why not?
I love the I love that phrase, proof of concept. Here's Little Drew music as we say goodbye. Listen, man, it's been too long. Couldn't wish you well enough. In this endeavor, the Soul Nostalgic Residency at Aqua Lounge, Aqua Supper Club. For details, where do people find out more about this?
Hit us up at soulnostalgic.com. You can get all the information, book tickets. Definitely come out. You will enjoy yourself. That's a promise.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think it's a great idea. By the way, that phrase, proof of concept, whatever you do, don't say that to your fiance next month. This marriage, we're just testing the waters here. All the best to you, my friend.
Thank you, man. Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure. There he is, Andrew Grange, a.k.a. Drew. That's right. Take care, man. Just let yourself up. We gotta move on. All right.
All right.
Is Medieval Times still chugging along?
I think so, yeah.
Something that big. It just made me think of that because he's down at the X and a recurring thing. It's like, Jesus. I think we first went to Medieval Times when we were still at the Edge, right? Wouldn't we have?
Do you remember that we participated?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was on horseback and you were a damsel in distress.
Was that it?
Okay. Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I think he's got an eye. I really do think there is a market for what he's doing.
Well, hope so, because again, you got to get creative.
Yeah,
but I often think about that, right? Like these bands, again, the people just, you know, trying to make a living. It's, and then you go into all these venues, and then really a headcount. We got to split this five ways. Huh? I'd rather split it four or three, maybe one. Well, you know, it's,
you and I like can it's you and I can barely split it two ways.
Mm-hmm.
our little band.
Yeah. It's gotta be stressful, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know how people do it. And especially a guy as talented as him. You know, like I said, back in the day, someone with that kind of, if that was, you know, those the streams he had, if those were records, he would have been a very wealthy man. Let's get moving on here to the retirement Sherpa. That's right, people. It's time to get the niblet back. Let me get the niblet music.
Nibbies.
Nibby. Hold on. All right, let me get some niblet music in preparation for another award-winning. That's not it. Here we go. Here we go. Once again, it's time for our weekly visit with the OG. That's right, the original retirement Sherpa. Tim.niblet at RaymondJames.ca. That's how you get a hold of him. But first, let's can we say a warm welcome? Can we extend a warm welcome to Timothy?
Well, good morning. It always feels like a warm welcome, whether you extend it or not. How about that?
Oh, that's great. Well, that's right. You know it's inferred, even if it's not overt.
Humble and Fred always like to extend a warm one. There's no doubt about that.
Well, my Gators will be getting a warm welcome Saturday. I'm flying down way too early Friday morning for the first game of the season against Miami, 3:30 on ABC if you want to watch. And 93,000 of my closest friends and I will be yelling and screaming and crossing our fingers.
Wow. You know, I wish I had passion for something like that. Howard has it with golf. You have it with that football team.
How many opening days have you been to?
Oh, gosh. I don't really know. as many as I can, and it depends on the matchup. Usually there's a few good games concurrently that I try to go down for. So, but this one was irresistible against Miami, right? Yeah. Big rival, interstate rival. Of course, both teams are kind of in the same place of their development. So, and we haven't lost yet, so it'll be awesome.
Amazing.
Well, that right. The season's actually started, right? Yeah, right? Or has it?
Right. So the bad news was this is week one. There's some really good games. Last week, they snuck in week zero. Florida State played Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland. So,
oh, okay. Right.
The bad news, the good news was college football is back. The bad news was it was Florida State, the arch rival, where my daughter used to teach. And the good news is they lost. So it was
There's you know what it is? It's profit and loss. It's a win-win, which brings us to today's topic, which is risk. And a word in, a lot of words in financial planning have to do with risk aversion and risk, et cetera. But to start it off, you say it's one of the most misused words in your industry. Why?
Well, there's lots of reasons. The biggest reason is usually people just substitute risk for volatility, for the up and down movements of an investment, be it a stock, an ETF, a fund, whatever. So GICs don't have any risk of volatility as an example, but if that's all you had building your portfolio for decades, you'd have a risk of a lot of money not being there because you missed out on a lot of growth being afraid of volatility, right? So some of the best investments have a lot of volatility, but most of it's upwards. That's how you make money.
Yeah, that is something. Do you often run into that with... Obviously, as an advisor, you advise what you think is right or wrong. Do you ever just run into people that they push back on risk?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we got some ways. We emulate, as I mentioned before, what pension funds, endowment funds do to mitigate that and have a good, as we'll talk about later, Sharpe Sortino ratio. But sure, it's just a knowledge thing, though, I think, Fred, and a comfort level thing like us on anything, right? So when you kind of explain things to them and give them the backdrop and show them, you know, what's in it for them, then they open up their options. Yeah.
I know you're going to talk a little bit about this, but we've touched on this idea of there is risk in not being in markets, and there's risk in being risk adverse because, as you say, you miss out on opportunities.
Absolutely, there's risk in not having time on your side. There's risk in not diversifying properly. Risk does exist. But the Chinese symbol for danger and opportunity, I think Phil taught me once in the basement there, is the same thing, right?
That's right.
So it can be a good thing.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, so to speak.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on a second. When was that again? Nothing what?
Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Sharpe and Sortino, are these individuals?
I know Sharpe definitely was. I'm not sure if Sortino is. I'm sure.
It sounds like a great restaurant, though. Are you guys good? Have you been to Sharpe and Sortino's? They're fabulous. They have a carbonara.
But this deals with ratios. What's that all about, Timothy?
Yeah, so this is something we can do for listeners. You know, the odds are pretty good that their risk-reward ratio could be better. So, you know, you do want to maximize the upside here, Howard. You might want to write this one down.
Okay, hang on a second.
You want to maximize the upside, minimize the downside, right? You know, so that's at the crux of what we do. But most people don't know what their Sharpe ratio is, a measurement of how much reward you're getting for each unit of risk you've taken on. And these last 3 to 5 years, if you think of everything that's happened in the market, feels like we could say that every 3 or 5 years after 33 in the industry, but these last 5 years have really been a great litmus test of whether your portfolio is properly positioned for great times, horrible times, and everything in between.
And getting back to the idea, though, that not being invested might be one of the biggest risks of all. I was listening to a newscast from the early 1980s, and at the end of the newscast that they said, and the Dow Jones today closed upward at 900 points, and I'm thinking, isn't the Dow Jones now over 10,000?
No.
No, was it? What is it?
Over 40.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I knew it was more than 900. So you think about it, in those 45 years, it's gone from 1,000 to 40,000. But if you were the kind of person that didn't trust or didn't, you know, trust in the fact that markets over time generally will increase, that is a risk of not being invested.
Absolutely right. I mean, we've got decades and decades worth of facts, of proof. You know, you got to keep the main thing the main thing. So what happens by the 10:30 a.m. report, which always brings a chuckle to me on the radio, how they're saying what happened to gold or the market or the Canadian dollar at 10:30? Like, who the cares?
That's right. Right.
You've got to, well, another good saying for you, Stephen Covey, right? Begin with the end in mind.
Yeah,
so if your end is that you need X percentage on your portfolio, how do you get there? And also, how do you minimize the ups and downs? I mean, you definitely can do it in a way that you're still going to get some great ups, but you're going to minimize the downs and all. And I don't think people, you know, frankly, a lot of advisors don't even look at portfolios that way. And prospects, listeners definitely should be aware of it, because they're probably missing out on something.
Yeah, a recent example, too, of that is not freaking out is, you know, when the Fed a couple of weeks ago decided, or 3 weeks ago decided, that they wouldn't lower interest rates in the States. Well, there was a bit of a sell-off there. It was alarming for a day or two, but now both the Dow and the TSX are still like in record territory, right? Like setting records every day. Again.
And you can't really blame people, because that's just a perspective that they're hearing, that they're getting, that they're, you know, reading on the web, or if you still get one of them, their newspaper things. But it never says, by the way, even with this drop, your portfolio is still probably up 8 to 10% for the year.
No, exactly.
And oh yeah, over the last 12 months, you're probably 12 to 15. And like Howard said, you know, the perspective's rarely there when you're getting information. When I first started in the industry, I read this book by one of the vets, and you know, he said, you can get information everywhere, but wisdom is sold separately.
That's great. Well, and that's one of the things that the Retirement Sherpa team does so well, is handles volatility and a lot of that stuff in the market, as we've talked about a million times. It's so emotional. The portfolios that the Sherpa team tests out very well. Many second opinion portfolios don't. So let Tim and the folks at the Retirement Sherpa Industries have you check your portfolio. That's all they're going to do, is have a quick look at it and make sure you have an appropriate volatility return ratio. And how do they do that? Do they come to your home? Do they reach out to you personally?
We meet them in a little shady restaurant. We meet them at Sharp and Sortino's in the back room.
Yeah, what is the mechanism? They meet you at a bar somewhere? Tim.Niblett at RaymondJames.ca is how it's all packaged. And safe travels this weekend. Good luck to your team.
Yeah, thank you. Looking forward to it. It'll be awesome. And I guess it'll be a few weeks before I at least officially see you guys. So enjoy, profit, and have an awesome week.
All right, okay, bro.
Okay. Right. Okay, brother. So what was that? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Did you write that? Is that yours?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I coined it several years ago. I coined it.
You know, one day, it's funny, we haven't really talked about this in a while, but I'm always fascinated, as I think you are, by cliches and hack phrases. But, you know, there was a day, like the first day somebody said that, maybe they were hanging out with their buddy, and he said, nothing ventured, nothing gained, and their buddy went, that's brilliant! Mm-hmm. Or the first time that somebody said, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And like the first day, that must have killed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway.
And then stuff like low-hanging fruit. You know, when we think about that, what it means, and then the vision you get, and it makes sense. Low-hanging.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There's so many of those things. Like,
well, I think that...
Turns of phrases.
Exactly. And I've said this before. You know, cliches may be cliche, but they become cliches. It's not because they're not true. There's truth to them.
It's because they're profound often.
Right, exactly. There's profundity. Speaking of profound, look at him. He's wearing his winter coat.
Howie, is that a word, profundity?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Yes, I thought you just made that up.
I wish I maybe on there was one day that somebody did.
Profundity. Wow.
Profundity, deep insight, great depth of knowledge or thought. Yeah, I know. It's a curse. It's a gift. You know what it is? It's a gift and a curse. Dan, are you cold? Is that what you're? Why you're wearing a jacket?
Yeah, the breeze is bringing in a little bit of the colder, cooler air. Is
it, yeah, I got this door open up my back. It's a bit chilly.
Fred's back is chilly.
Fucking.
My front's okay.
Oh, yeah. Because it's all warm with your giant ball sack.
He keeps his hands warm.
That's right. Dan's gone. Dan right in the middle just of the sentence. Just disappeared.
He clicked something.
I got some work to do right now. I don't call it work. It's actually, it's you know what it is? It's a, why isn't this playing? Oh, here we go. Kelsey's loves happy hour so much they celebrated twice a day. I mentioned this the other day. It's quite fabulous. $5 drafts, wine, and mixed drinks, and $10 for appetizers every day from 3 to 5 and 8 to close. How about that? How about them apples? Only at Kelsey's, the original Roadhouse. I also mentioned, you know, some of these, restaurants that would like to be Kelsey's, they have, like, wing nights maybe once a week, if that. Kelsey's is where wings first landed. Stop by for half-price wings and $6 Coors Light every Thursday night. And how about that? They have half-price wing Wednesdays and half-price wings on Thursdays, as I just mentioned. At Kelsey's, it feels good to give back. They've partnered with the Boys and Girls Club of Canada. To give back locally, visit your local Roadhouse and buy a $5 gift card, and you'll get 3 meals free. Did you hear that? Buy a $5 That's gift fantastic. Card, get 3 meals free. All proceeds go to BGC Canada. So what are you waiting for? Join all your friends at Kelsey's, the original Roadhouse. Find out more at kelseys.ca. Freddie?
Yes, whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. U.S. Open Tennis Championships begin this week, and again, go to Bodog if you choose to wager on that or pretty much anything else under the sun involving sports.
The golf season, the official PGA Tour season, ends starting tomorrow. It is the FedEx Cup finals, playoffs. I could explain the format, but it's too complicated. It's also, today will be the last taping of my golf podcast for the regular season. Pardon me?
For how long?
Well, no, what we do is from the Masters to Labor Day, we do it once a week. Mm-hmm. After that, we kind of cut it back to once every couple of weeks.
Mm.
So our regular season, you know, coincides with the golf season. And this will be our last taping of our regular season, is what I'm trying to say. Swing Thoughts, it'll be out on Thursday or Friday.
I saw the advert the other day. The President's Cup is in Canada.
In Montreal.
In the next couple of weeks. Yeah. In the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
I forgot that it was going to be in Canada, and I thought, I'm surprised Howie hasn't made plans to jump on the car and go witness that. But you're not one for being at golf tournaments, are you?
Yes, the short answer is no. But I mean, you know, you've been to some iconic ballparks. Mm-hmm. I've been to Augusta. So for me, that was an experience.
Right.
So if I had not already have done that, I still would want to do that. But as far as running around a golf tournament, I just find it, I don't find the experience, except for a few times that I've had sort of VIP access, which is cool. But I don't, just to witness it, it's a lot of work, man.
So this is the President's Cup is U.S. against the world, right?
Yes. They started this about 30-ish, maybe, or in that neighborhood, 30, 40 years, to so that people from all the other countries that were not Great Britain, Ireland, and the continental Europe would have a chance to play a Ryder Cup-style tournament. The problem is, there's great players from all other countries, Australia, South Africa, Canada. They just have never, they've only beat the U.S. once in, I want to say 20 matches or 15 matches. It's been pretty one-sided, yeah.
So how many fellas will we have on that team?
How many Canadians?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a point system. You make the team based on how you've done over the past. Okay. You're not just, so there's six automatics and I think six captain's choices, and Mike Weir being the captain, I don't think a Canadian yet has made it automatically, but I believe after this week they make their choices, and I got to think that Mike's going to choose probably Nick Taylor, maybe Corey Connors, but at least there'll be at least one Canadian on his team.
Now, who's the capitaine of the U.S. team?
I think it's Jim Furyk again. I'm not 100%.
What about Tiger? Is it just like, no, Tiger, you'd probably be more of a detriment than a help?
No, Tiger has been an assistant captain on some Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams.
I mean to play, though.
Oh, no, he's not. No, he's not. Mm. He's not. Mm-hmm. He can't play. He can't play. Tiger will probably...
literally cannot play.
Yeah, he can't play anymore. He might be he'll probably get his shot at being Ryder Cup captain in a couple more years. Dan, are you back? What happened?
Yeah,
he just disappeared.
Yeah.
There are so many mini putts in Florida. I wonder if he does that the odd time.
Who, Tiger?
Yeah, it just goes to a mini putt.
Like with the windmill and the clown's face and stuff?
Yeah, the clown's face and stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe he does that. Yeah,
just loosen up, Tiger.
Why not? Loosen up.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, do you know why he doesn't do that? Because he's got his own golf course. And he's got his own.
Why? I ask that seriously.
Why
doesn't he do that?
He's got his own golf course in his backyard. That's probably why. Hey, Dan, what happened to you? I got worried. All of a sudden, you had disappeared.
I had a computer fail. Just the whole thing shut down. So I'm back on my other computer. Hey, so what do you call it? The mini putts. Like, is there like tournament play in that world? Is there like a whole can you make money doing that?
I don't know. Could you make money? But
there is a mini putt circuit.
Yes, I've seen it on TSN or whatever.
Yeah, there's no idea. And when I first moved to Montreal back in 1988, I turned on a French station, and it was a cable station, but everyone watches it where they televised mini putt. And people get quite excited.
When you finish your, whatever you're doing with the real golf game, you could maybe pick up some bucks doing that, because you're good at that kind of thing. So, kind of move into the pros of that world.
Yeah, maybe I could turn mini putt pro. I could turn mini putt pro. That seems like a
mini
kind
putt
of thing.
Pro and I don't care. Mini putt pro and I don't care.
My favorite part of that is you at the end. What's Doll doing right now? Is she shopping for boots?
Hasn't opened yet.
Where's Doll? Poor Doll. She's just in there hiding until we finish this show. Okay, well, that's coming soon. You just talked about Bodog, I believe, but let's let Bodog talk about them themselves.
Feeling stuck on the sidelines?
Watch where you're walking, man.
When life gives you too much to tackle,
I'm gonna need that draft tomorrow.
You know it's time to play. It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Get the latest sports odds and free tips to help you go all the way this football season. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make a play.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man, his voice is nice and low.
Ho!
Dan Duran, the anchor man comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And
now live from Lakeside. His backup computer well in place. Please welcome movie anchorman and all-around grand fellow, who will be appearing in the next winery drag show, where he dresses up his penis as Beyonce and all the other girls from that girl band that I don't remember. He's got a lot of there's a lot of stuff going on down there. Dan Duran, everybody. Dan Duran. Oh, hang on a second. I've turned off your microphone.
Oh. Back now?
That was a mistake. And now here's Dan Duran, everybody.
Oh, okay, so three quick stories today.
Yeah.
And I'll start with a serious one. The exploding tire incident yesterday at the Delta Airlines maintenance facilities. Two workers were killed and a third seriously injured when a tire exploded. Now, here's something I didn't know. And I brought this story to the show because I know, Howard, you're really interested in airplane-y things.
Yeah.
You know, car tires are inflated to like 32 pounds per square inch PSI, right?
Yes.
Airplane tires are roughly 235 PSI. Now, the official cause of this incident has not been released, but apparently the tire was not on the plane. It did blow up for whatever reason, and fragments from that tire, including tire parts and metal parts and stuff, is what probably killed the workers. The pressure of the explosion would be the equivalent, they've done tests, the equivalent of a stick of dynamite. It's a pretty dangerous thing when a tire explodes.
Yeah.
Either on or off an airplane.
Yeah, obviously. That's not screwing around, Dan.
Well, that's a lot of pressure, man. Jeez.
A lot of pressure. And you know what? I think even one of the Concorde jets that exploded or whatever was because the tire exploded, fragments went into a fuel tank, and the fuel tank blew up. So, not to be taken lightly, but it's just interesting. I thought it would be something you'd want to know, Howard.
Well, you know, if you've ever watched a plane land, and I have, the big planes, they come down pretty hard on those main tires.
Sure.
And here's a little fun fact. When the weather gets bad, when there's wet runways or, you know, a chance, then they really come down hard on the mains. And so I guess that's because that's why those tires have to be so inflated.
Yeah, otherwise they'd be on their rims, right?
So they you can't land on rims, Dan.
Yeah, you don't want to land on a rim.
See, I find the whole thing fascinating from this angle. The pressure involved, the weight of the plane, what Howard just described. And again, it's just a miraculous that industry. There's not more accidents. Like you'd think there'd be, and I know the odd time a plane will go land and a tire will blow out and things are fine. But it just seems also precarious, doesn't it? The way those little arms come down with the wheels on them, and then all that weight and that speed bang onto the runway.
The whole thing is ludicrous. Yeah.
You know, the jet engines with the spinning fans, falling off. Yeah.
It's crazy.
I don't know why anyone does it.
exactly. And you know what? You can it's not me, but there are a lot of people. In fact, my sweet little wife just told me last week that she's a bit of a nervous flyer, more than I thought. But I can understand how people are nervous. If you look at the whole concept.
I know. And wow. It's so weird because even though I know from a physics standpoint how airplanes stay in the air, even when I drive by Pearson, I'm like, what is that thing doing in the sky? How is that thing up in the sky right now?
Yeah.
I had a plane for a while where we had retractable gear. Most of the small planes you see in the air are called they're called tricycle gear because they have one in the front, two in the main. Similar to the big planes, it's just more they just have more tires. But most of those small planes are called fixed gear planes, meaning that the gear is always there and doesn't go in and out. But we had a plane where the gear was kind of cool. You hit a button and the wheels come down. Well, I was landing at Buttonville one day with another pilot. And when the gear comes down, there's three indicators. There's three in the green, we say. And then you look at, there's a little tiny side mirror, and you can actually get the passenger to look down and make sure they're there. Because sometimes, because it's just it's like a light, and there's a fuse that goes with that light. Anyway, we got an indicator that the gear was down, but he looked and he couldn't see one of the one of them down. Have I not told you the story?
I can't recall if you did.
So I said to the tower, we're coming in for landing, but I'm not sure my gear is down. I'm gonna fly by the tower, I'm gonna do a passover. Can you tell me if the gear is down? You know, I'm not declaring an emergency yet, but I need you to see. No. So we fly by the tower in Buttonville. They can't confirm that the gear is down, even though I'm getting an indicator that it was. Now, on these smaller planes, what there is, there's a sort of like, you know how there's an emergency brake in your car, that kind of handle. Yeah. Well, there's a hydraulic pump where you can pump the gear down if you need to. So right. I did that. And again, I was pretty sure. I wasn't enough. Here's the thing. I wasn't 100% sure, but I was pretty sure the gear was down. Mm-hmm. And so I came around again. But this time, as we were going into landing, and if you remember Buttonville, it's on the 400. So we're coming into landing. Mm-hmm. And I'm only about 3 miles away from the airport again. And I can see on the side of the runway are fire trucks and emergency vehicles.
Wow.
And because what they're going to do is if I come in and sparks start to fly and, you know, as right. you said, who knows what the fuck happens. They're going to
foam you.
They're going to foam at me. And I was just, it was weird because I said to the other pilot, as we both looked at the emergency vehicles, I went, you don't see that every day. and we laughed. I said, I believe they're for us. And anyway,
that had to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah. It was, again.
Because as you say, you weren't 100% sure. 100% so it's like sure. your mind starts to race. And so rather than if they didn't come down, why wouldn't you just look like for a swimming pool or something to land in rather than have the sparks that fly and all that?
Why wouldn't I look for a swimming pool to land in? Like a swimming pool, just like come down in somebody's backyard.
In their swimming pool. Right.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing.
Fred's not a
I wish. I know, no, I know. He is a. I really, what? Honestly, I wish I could have called you and said, Fred, what do you think I should do? And then you would have said, swimming pool.
I'm put her go. Down in a pool.
Put her down in a pool. I would have said, that's fucking brilliant. So I came down.
Scary stuff, man. I don't know. You. I'm just so impressed and fascinated by flying a plane like you did. Like, I such a suck. I would never have done that.
Well, I was just going to say, the story ended because we actually came down and we crash landed and I died. Is how the story.
But the good Lord brought you back. The good Lord brought you
Jesus
back.
Jesus said, Howard, our time is not over. You know, I know you joke about the swimming pool, but I've often thought, because when you fly around the city, you know, one of the things you're first taught is, you know, when you're flying out cross country, you're always kind of looking like, okay, if I lost an engine now, oh, I could put it down in that farm or over there.
Right,
but in the city, because of my golf experience, I knew where there were golf courses. You know, I would be flying from Buttonville to Burlington, and I could just look down because you only need. Like, I'd look, I said this to a pilot once. I said, I'm just looking for a par five. Because a par five, typically 500 yards or 1,500 feet, which is way long enough to land one of those planes.
Now, is there anything on a plane, and this is a serious question,
yes.
In a situation like that, is there like a horn or something that, say you were going to put it down on a par five, but what if there was golfers? Is there something on the plane
that would alert
that would sound?
No, there isn't.
Okay.
But I would say this. If I was the golfers and I saw a small plane start coming down, I might get a four.
Yeah, but if the engines are gone and it's gliding, you may not even hear it.
Well, that's a good point.
I make good points.
Oh, no, because, you know, but I'll tell you what, not as good as landing in a pool.
Yeah.
You
should carry a whistle, maybe.
Yes, or a loud, maybe, or one of those.
A Fox 40.
All right, well, that's it. Do you guys realize that when we come back, next week will be September?
What about my other two stories?
Oh, dude, I'm sorry. We've gone too long. I thought you had
what
just...
What were they, Dan?
Yeah, can you save them?
No, one's,
give us
one's
the headlines.
One's a Pizza Hut has a box that turns into a table. And then because okay. it's, you know, talking about tomatoes and pizza and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Today is the day that the they have the big La Tomatina in Spain. Today's the when they throw
tomatoes. Yeah.
Yeah. 20,000 people pay to throw tomatoes at each other after a guy goes up a greased pole and pulls a ham off it. And then they do it for an hour and then they have to stop.
You ever have a guy go up your greased pole?
Pulls a ham off it. He's serious.
Do they really pull
that's
a
how
hammer?
They started.
All right.
So he goes up a pole.
Nobody can throw a tomato until they get to the top of the pole.
and pull the ham off.
Yeah, there's a hammer some on top of the pole, and they pull it. The first person that can do that, you know, because grease poles are hard to climb.
Oh, yeah.
So the first, and then they start throwing throw it, and you know, people, there's 20,000 people that throw tomatoes at each other. It's a big thing.
Yeah.
And you know, there's all kinds of rules about tomato throwing, but yeah.
The problem is you're starting to stagger or stutter here. Your connection is
Oh, is it? Okay.
And we would have had time for your other two stories if you hadn't, you know, had to go and come back.
All right, I'm very sorry.
No, I apologize. Yeah, I didn't realize you actually were going to do three stories.
No, I apologize.
No, we should all apologize. Adal, apologize.
I apologize. Okay. I apologize, too. I shouldn't have brought three stories.
We're going away now and coming back in a few days. Monday, of course, is Labor Day. Is it Monday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll be back on the Tuesday. Yeah. All right. And we'll
all
start.
All the kiddies back to school on Tuesday.
That's right.
Look at that. Where did the summer go?
And did you get that notification, Fred, about the Zoom meeting we have on Tuesday morning?
Yes.
All right. Big time.
Am I involved it again?
Dan, you're more than welcome. It's a strategy meeting for our big Kelsey's end of summer 13th anniversary podcast party.
All right.
So you should be there.
Yeah.
And has anyone contacted Bruce Mallory?
Done.
Excellent. Okay. Well, then, you know what? I feel better.
Right.
All right. You know what? And I'm proud of us today. We got through the entire program without mentioning you know who.
I don't know if I know.
Please,
I
did it again
yesterday.
Oh, please, that guy. Please.
Okay. Yeah. You sure?
Don't.
Sure you don't want to mention
it? I don't want to. No. I want. What do you mean? No. Don't. Please don't talk about what he did yesterday.
Why would he do?
I don't know. You were going to say, oh, we done it again yesterday.
Oh, no, no, he was indicted again yesterday.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I want to talk about it because we got through the whole show.
And he agreed to the debate.
Okay, now we're talking about it again.
We're not going to talk about that.
We're not talking about it. All right.
Oh, hold on. Whoa.
Fuck, what?
Stop that stuff right now. It's, you know, today we renamed the Zoom Theater. Who's our new name?
You know what, Fred? After all she's done for us, she takes care of us. She gives us free articles. New York Times, Washington Post, and she's every day we get four or five. In case we don't know what's going on in Trump world, this woman who contributes so much to our program, it's long overdue, the Julie Fleming Zoom Theater.
Okay.
How do you think of that as a choice, Freeds?
That's fantastic. I think that's a nice tribute to a wonderful woman.
Exactly. Thank you, and we'll see you all next month.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, our newest returning sponsor, Kelsey's Original Roadhouse. For comments and contests, we read all of our emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. That's humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. See what you can do to help us out by subscribing or maybe rating the podcast. Sharing it with a friend would be great as well. For Humble and Fred from the Julie Fleming Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, it doesn't matter how you dress up your favorite penis, you should just enjoy every goddamn day. Jigsaw jazz in the get fresh flow, pulling out jobs and jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone, bottles and cans, and just clap your hands, and just clap your hands.